So we're circling back on Climate Ecosystems Steering Committee. I will kick over to John Pappalardo, who is leading that charge. We're all set, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Climate and Ecosystem Steering Committee met on September 2nd. We have no motions and no required action today, although I do hope that the council listens to the presentation Michelle is going to give and engages with us. We covered a tremendous amount of information and took in a lot of updates on projects that are ongoing, primarily the IRA projects, which you'll learn more about during this presentation. We had some good conversation around two subcommittees we formed. One is on what we call process mapping, and the other is on communications. We took in some good feedback and had some good feedback for the service concerning the State of the Ecosystem report. And so in the presentation, you'll see there's a slide with next steps that'll give the council a better appreciation for the ongoing work and the next steps for this committee. And with that, Mr. Chair, I turn it over to Michelle.
Great. Thank you, Chairman Pappalardo. My mouse will not advance the slides. All right. Oh, too far. Now it's like really sensitive. Before we couldn't get it to advance. Okay. You've seen this before. This is just the goal and objectives for the Climate and Ecosystem Steering Committee, this new group that is aiming to provide overarching guidance to the council about how we can do climate-ready fisheries management approaches across all of our fishery management plans. We've now been meeting for the better part of a year. We've met three times, you know, kind of still figuring out our role and how we can best serve the council, but it's a really dynamic, exciting group with, you know, folks have a lot to say. It's been really gratifying to work with them, and, you know, thanks to the broader participants in that process as well for participating in our meetings and providing presentations. So I won't read the objectives to you, but this is where we're aiming to get to. Before the last steering committee, I was thinking about all of the members of the steering committee, who, so you can see here, just as a reminder to the diverse suite of folks that we have as a part of this group, and we have some staff contributing. We've had a number of other staff attending just because this is so cross-cutting, you know, our IRA project leads, et cetera. We have a lot of crossover between this group and some other groups that are doing related work, risk policy working group, the East Coast Coordination Group. We have crossover as designed with our scientific and statistical committee, and then we have identified our subcommittee members here as well. So thanks to everybody who's been a part of this process. You can find the summaries of our 2025 meetings linked here and also on the steering committee's webpage. Earlier in the year, we developed SOPs and identified some roles for ourselves. So kind of in summation across the year, we hope as a steering committee to provide some support for risk policy implementation, and we'll continue to figure out the how that's going to go and the timing of that as the risk policy working group kind of works through their process. Basically, the risk policy work is being closely informed by the IRA project that we have that's evaluating ABC control rules, and so that's really informing how that process is getting refined. So we'll be waiting to support them as they need us. We feel that, you know, so we talked about this, I think, at an earlier meeting this year, but the steering committee can be a clearinghouse for input on the State of the Ecosystem report, and so we've continued to engage with the Science Center on that report. We've got kind of multiple staff working across multiple different council bodies, including the SSC and the SSS of the SSC, kind of providing input there. Continuing to stay in touch with NOAA's Changing Ecosystems and Fisheries Initiative. Got a presentation on forecasts from them at our recent meeting, which I'll talk about in a little bit, thinking about how their products could be useful to the council and thinking about some applications. And then specifically engaging in the near term on the council's portfolio of Inflation Reduction Act funded projects. So we did spend quite a bit of time on that at our steering committee meeting on the 2nd. So I think the chair kind of covered everything that was a part of this webinar. There's a lot of detail I'm sorry if you had to read this really long meeting summary that I prepared, but we get so many comments that feel really important to capture for the record in those summaries that I've been trying to have them be fairly detailed. And certainly if there's a section of that meeting that you want to listen to, I'm happy to share the webinar link with you. Just send me an email and I can send that off. You know, if you want to get more of a flavor of Joe's presentation, for example, on the State of the Ecosystem Report or these short form ecosystem and socioeconomic profiles, or if you want to hear Dr. Ross's presentation on the CEPI forecasts, can certainly fry that to you. So moving into the Inflation Reduction Act funded updates, if you go to the IRA page on the council website, you'll find a revised set of IRA project briefs. So there's one page for each initiative, and then there's this kind of cover page that gives you a snapshot of where we are with the different initiatives. So to date, as of this month, we've awarded what we would consider to be all the major analytical contracts for the ABC control rule project that I mentioned just now. We have a contract with Angelia Miller at Maris Collaborative to do work on ecosystem component species. I'll talk about that in a little bit. We have a contract with University of Massachusetts for a portfolio analysis and a contract with the Parnon Group to develop a holistic strategic plan. So those are sort of the major pieces of work. We have oversight teams for pretty much all of our projects. We're adding a few people here and there to oversight teams or steering committees, but those teams are pretty well established. We're really working right now on planning workshops for 2026, especially the ones that will occur in the first half of the year. And then in the coming months, we'll be working through some activities for later in the year. And then, you know, we could spend a lot of time presenting these projects to you if we wanted to at every meeting. There's a lot of work happening, but we're trying to be kind of mindful of council time and time at committee meetings and really focus on presenting a project update when we have some information that we need to gather, some feedback that we feel like is essential or there's a major finding that we wanted to share. So you will be hearing about bits and pieces of these projects as we go, but not every project, every meeting. But if anyone has questions about a project, you want to know what it's about or what we're working on, I'm always happy to chat with you about that. I think I have a handle on most of what's happening in most of them, most of the time. And if not, I know who to ask. So as I mentioned, kind of going into 2026 and even into 2027, we're going to be starting to kind of pull the results of some of these analyses together, kind of socialize them, talk about them, work out issues and questions with other groups, and then eventually kind of move them into potential council management actions. So for the first half of next year, we're working on a few different meetings that we're planning for. One is going to be with council members to talk about the draft holistic strategic plan. You'll be hearing more about details of logistics from Mr. Peros and probably pretty soon. Some of the staff for the East Coast councils and the commission are going to be meeting to talk about governance questions. So how do we use advisory bodies? How do we use advisory panels, committees? How do we do joint management? What's working? What's not working? A follow-up to that will occur later in the year with a broader group beyond the staff. We're also going to convene RSSC and others needed to talk about dynamic reference points. Dr. Cornan is leading the charge on that, working with Dr. Feeney. Later in the year, we have an IRA initiative related to the Atlantic Cod Transition Action that we talked about earlier, what exactly that initiative continues to look like or whether that evolves into focusing on other elements of our groundfish management plan is something that we're still working out, but we did plan some engagement with the industry and others on opportunities there, and so that we will continue to think about and plan for. Probably moving into 2027, we'll talk with NOAA Fisheries and our other regional partners about the council's operating agreement and work on some revisions there. And then as we're working through the portfolio analysis project, we certainly want to talk to permit holders about getting their input on that, but it's early enough in the project that we're not, you know, ready to have those conversations just yet. So, you know, as we move forward with these and have information that we kind of need to solicit from different groups or from the council, you'll hear more about these opportunities. So we're going to, you know, continue to work on working with the contractors, and some of these projects are really more staff directed analyses. So we're going to continue to make progress on the technical side and on the communication side. The oversight teams for these projects are meeting regularly. We do have steering committee members on some of these teams, especially for these analytical contracts that we've already implemented this year. Continue to plan for these meetings in 2026. We're going to want to think, as we are starting to move towards the later half of this IRA funding period, about how do we take the results of these projects and turn them into potential council actions. That's kind of the end step, or at least the end goal of, I think, all of these projects, is to make changes to the way that we're doing management. So some of them envision very specific actions. Some of them are more kind of working across our council portfolio to think about how we can update the way that we're doing our work. So that'll continue to come, and we'll want to think about, you know, how we're setting priorities and timeframes for different priorities, and how that fits in with these IRA projects. And then, you know, as I noted, we'll think about the best path forward for Initiative 2, kind of given that management action that we talked about earlier today. So just a little bit more specifics about a couple of the IRA projects that we heard about at the steering committee meeting. Angelia talked about the ecosystem component species project. She's working on that. I'm involved, Julian's involved, and I think Robin and others who have species that are potentially on this candidate ecosystem component species list will also be engaged. Really, the purpose of the IRA project is to establish some strategies and ways that we could evaluate the factors in the Magnuson-Stevens Act and the National Standard Guidelines for whether something might be considered an ecosystem component species. So this is really about kind of developing those tools and kind of our thought process about how we would do this work. Any council action to actually designate ecosystem components would come later. But certainly we could use the information from this contracted project as a foundation for that. So we'll be really, Angelia has already done quite a bit of work on researching this type of work that's occurred at other councils, and then be working on criteria and thresholds and doing an evaluation for some different pilot species. And I think the pilot species that we might be considering here really kind of run the gamut. Some, you know, have a lot more data and information available. Some more fishing activity. Others, you know, are really not a targeted species, or maybe there's a lot less information available. And so we want to make sure that the evaluation criteria are robust to a range of conditions. And so that's kind of the reason to consider as pilots a diverse range of species here. So just a little background on what is an ecosystem component species. Can be the species at the stock level or as a complex of species. I think the key thing here is that we're hoping it would maybe streamline some of our required management activities by designating something as an ecosystem component versus having it fully under management in a fishery management plan. So there's some things that our understanding is that we would no longer have to do if something were an ecosystem component species or stock. But that doesn't mean that we would then continue to think about what conservation measures would be appropriate for the species and how we would work them into our plans as a bycatch consideration or in other ways. So we did talk a little bit about the steering committee, about a list of potential focal species for this analysis. So here's just some of the ones that we're considering. As I mentioned, we really want to make sure that we've got a list of pilot species that span a range of considerations so that our evaluation metrics are going to kind of cover the different types of possibilities. When we talked about this at the steering committee, we definitely had a discussion about concerns about some species that are kind of important, commercially important, and so those, I think, are coming off our list. Other species that we might want to add to the list would be some important forage species. We've already highlighted sand lance as one that we've heard about previously. and had some conversations about, but there's probably other forage species we could consider here as well. There's a number of, for example, forage species that are designated in the Mid-Atlantic's managed forage amendment, so there may be others that we would want to consider here. Again, we want this list of pilot species for evaluation to be kind of broad-based and also kind of a list that we can actually do a relatively thorough evaluation of each of them, and so probably everything on this list is not going to make its way into that pilot evaluation. We'll really see what resources we have available as we make our way forward here. And just another project that we had a bit of a detailed discussion about at the steering committee meeting, and I think we'll continue to share about this and share the methods and make sure that folks understand what we're trying to do here, is this portfolio analysis project. So Dr. Lauren Brewster and Connor Cosino from UMass Dartmouth SMAST presented on the project, so thanks to them for joining the meeting. We're really trying to think about the species portfolio that's managed by the council and or that occurs in the region and maybe is, you know, federally managed, say, by the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council, kind of what's caught together, what are the opportunities for increasing yield and revenue and minimizing risk. And we really want to keep in mind biological constraints on the system, sustainability constraints, how species interact with each other. So the species distribution models that we mentioned in the last agenda item that we're applying to EFH designation and review, we also can apply different aspects of those models to this type of work to think about species interactions. So we really want to build on previous portfolio analysis here and engage stakeholders and think about what are some solutions. The conversation at the steering committee, kind of where we got to for the end of this agenda item, was focusing on kind of which fleets or species are important to focus on here, you know, considering all the gears that are used in the Northeast region, all the species that are harvested. It's kind of impossible to do a deep dive into all of those sort of segments of the fleet at once, so pulling out the most important things to look at. The questions that were asked to the steering committee were, what species should we include? Should we configure the portfolio analysis by gear, by fleet? Kind of what alternative permit structures might we be considering here? So the feedback from the steering committee was focus on recent importance commercially. We noted during the steering committee meeting that this analysis focuses on commercial fishing, not recreational fishing. That would be a separate project if we wanted to go down that road at some point in the future. We did note that there's, you know, a number of Mid-Atlantic managed species that occur in the New England region that may be harvested in what we would consider kind of the New England geography. And so broadening the focus, not just to be species that our council manages, but that are managed by the Mid-Atlantic Council, seemed appropriate. So that was the steering committee's advice. And we do have a oversight team meeting for this project in about a month from now, and so we'll talk about that. We'll talk about kind of how to move forward the analysis, and you'll continue to hear more about this project in the coming months. So other work of the steering committee through its subcommittees, as Mr. Pappalardo mentioned, we have these two subcommittees. One is process mapping and the other is communications. So process maps are basically flowcharts that outline kind of the workflow that we complete as we're doing a council action. So the one that's been built out the most completely to date and really vetted is the specifications flowchart. So Dr. Brennenbaum and others on the subcommittee really worked through that process over the summer. We also drafted up a table of on-ramps. So those are the sorts of information products and, you know, different types of, you know, scientific or other advice that might make its way into management. So the question is kind of, what are those opportunities, where in the process do they fit in? Are they being well utilized? Are they not being well utilized or not utilized at all? So we're really trying to use this subcommittee work to kind of develop a common understanding of the process and then where our best opportunities are to better include climate and ecosystem information. So we're working, I think the plan would be this fall to really build out not just the specifications flowchart, but also amendment and framework flowcharts, build out that table of on-ramps and kind of what the opportunities are and what the challenges are, if there's examples of folks doing this at other councils or in other places. In fisheries management, and then can bring that to the steering committee at our next meeting, potentially early in 2026, to talk about like what are the best opportunities we have to try and bring some information into the process in concrete ways. So I think we've got kind of a good plan for how to move that forward, and we just need to complete that work in the next few months. So I expect that process mapping subcommittee will be meeting soon. And then the communications subcommittee is our other area of work that we have for the steering committee. We've got a number of tasks for that communications subcommittee, really thinking about what are our goals for communication. We've done a bit of work on that, looking back into other past work, including our ecosystem-based fishery management work, to think about lessons learned. I think that's something we can work on in the coming months. Creating outreach materials. You know, we've done some outreach for our Inflation Reduction Act projects, but broadening that, including things like, you know, where can industry get involved in these projects, and making sure that there's awareness there in a straightforward way. We've talked about standardizing language for changing ecosystem fisheries initiative products. This is something that CEFI nationally is working on, and so we want to make sure, we understand kind of where they're going with that. And how we can help and communicate that out through our council process. Describing the council's risk policy process as that moves into implementation. Connecting with oversight teams for our IRA projects to think about specific opportunities for outreach and how the subcommittee can help. And then we also talked about stakeholder engagement sessions. And so we have kind of a working plan for what would be included in that, but haven't figured out the exact time frame yet. So the steering committee had some feedback for the subcommittees to guide our near-term work, so specifically to flowchart the amendment and framework processes, so we'll work on that in the coming months, draft up the on-ramps table. There's a national effort on process mapping approaches that we can coordinate with as needed. I think they've done a lot of kind of focus groups with folks from different councils, and so especially in areas of... is another council effectively using an on-ramp? I think they're going to be able to provide us some ideas and examples there. So we'll be working to get these things drafted up by the end of the year, so we have really something for the steering committee to chew on when we meet next. And then the communications subcommittee, the tasking as in a near-term focus was on risk policy communication as implementation proceeds. So the staff will be coordinating on those issues, thinking about the best timing for that. And we do have, you know, some other tasks for that subcommittee that we can begin to work on as well. So just to share, and hopefully I get this all roughly correct, you can definitely see the presentations and the steering committee materials from the second, as well as there's some details in the meeting summary you can read. But Dr. Joe Caracappa gave us some updates on how things are going with preparing for the 2026 State of the Ecosystem Report. So they expect to include forecasts from the CEFI program, which is really exciting. So they're working at the best ways to present those within the context of the State of the Ecosystem Report. As in kind of coordination with a nationwide efforts, looking to revise some community indicators, something that Dr. Caracappa talked about our SSC with earlier in the year is looking at profitability indicators and incorporating net revenue as a part of that. So moving forward on those initiatives, and then also improving some of the language around fisheries stability and what that means. That's something that the SSS had talked about. Just to note, and this is, I think this was presented to the council when Joe gave the SOB report for this year, but they do have this highlight section, something they've been focusing on recently. And so just putting in another plug for that, if you're, you know, on the water, you're seeing something unusual, anomalous, things that you haven't ever seen before, you haven't seen in a long time, something that's abnormal, they would really love to hear about it. That is kind of a leading indicator for change, and things can drive them to go kind of look into their data and see if they can validate the observations. And they're really working hard to incorporate those types of things as highlights in the reports. In addition, you know, many of the state of the ecosystem indicators are kind of system level indicators, but if you break those down into species specific indicators, that can certainly start to inform our risk policy. And so there's definitely a connection between risk policy factor scoring and the types of the information that you would find in the state of the ecosystem report. And so we have active conversations ongoing with Science Center staff about how to make that work happen. Something else that Dr. Karakappa presented to the steering committee was these snapshot ecosystem and socioeconomic profiles. Joe observed that there are lots of requests for these ESPs. They provide a lot of detailed information about ecosystem considerations for different stocks as part of like an assessment process. But the full length versions of these can be very intensive to develop, and they don't have the resources to develop all of them, or not many in any given year. So they're moving into another format, an alternative format that would create these short form or snapshot ESPs that wouldn't have to be tied to the research track assessment process, just giving a snapshot of some key indicators. These would be much faster to prepare, and the idea is that they would build in indicators that they could reproduce across a number of species and update relatively frequently. So how many of these they might have the capacity to produce in any given year and exactly what these reports look like, I think, is a little bit to be determined, but this is something that they'd like to move towards. There's a lot of positive sentiment about this at the steering committee, feeling that they would be useful, including as the SSC is setting catch advice, but potentially for other applications. So we had some specific conversations about kind of what might be included in the snapshots, but just if you weren't aware that this product is something that's coming online, this is being developed. And this is, I don't expect you to read this, but this is just a sense of kind of what the herring snapshot looks like in its current draft form. I expect it's already evolved even since we got the presentation earlier this month. I think Dr. Karakappa would probably be the best person. If you have questions, I encourage you to reach out to him. He's kind of very open to having conversations about different products that they're working on. And finally, Andrew Ross, who is not within the Science Center, but what is within the Geophysical Fluid Dynamics Laboratory, probably based in Princeton. That's where that lab is based. Gave us a presentation about the forecast products that are being developed by the Changing Ecosystems and Fisheries Initiative. These are pretty cool. We saw the second seasonal forecast. So these forecast out for a year, and they're running them every 3 months. And then there's also decadal forecasts that are annual forecasts that go out 10 years. They're adding new information to the forecasts, including recently biogeochemistry. And they have an operational prototype for the seasonal forecasts. So we talked at some length about these products and kind of what they entail. They've been able to do kind of look back at real observations and ground truth on these predictions and see how they're performing. And I think generally it seems they're fairly comfortable with the predictive power of these forecasts. But that'll only, I think, improve over time as there's kind of more and more forecasts and we can look back and see how their performance was. So they can provide the results by region, and you can see some regions are a little easier to predict than others. So they're currently trying to do some assessments of the accuracy of the forecasts. They really want to be able to communicate uncertainty and kind of how we understand that. And so they're thinking about ways to provide that sort of information. They're actively this fall working on how to present information in the State of the Ecosystem report for next year. They plan to launch some of these biogeochemistry products next year. And then they'll plan to release kind of further out projections fairly soon. We did get a presentation, I think, at our May steering committee meeting about the CEPI portal, and so there's a link to that here. At some point, I'll make sure to get it up on the council website as well, so you have it handy. But a lot of these products are available for download or for you to investigate further on the CEPI portal. So the steering committee was definitely appreciative of the opportunity to learn more about these. I think as we get more presentations about them, we'll be more kind of comfortable with understanding them and thinking about potential applications. The group discussed that we could definitely envision applying these to our decision-making, kind of evaluating risk. The specific example that was raised at the steering committee was thinking about how we might apply the seasonal products to setting scallop catch advice. And so we're going to have some conversations in the near term between the scallop management team and Science Center staff and those working on these forecasts to see what the applications and opportunities might be there. So that's kind of an area of focus for us in terms of applying these CEPI products to some of our council discussions. So that's all I have. Happy to take questions about steering committee, Inflation Reduction Act projects, or anything else that was presented. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Bachman. It's a lot of stuff you got on your plate there, and you're just kind of coordinating a lot of this. Actually, I jump ahead of the line here. I do have some questions, and this is one of the specific IRA projects, the portfolio analysis, and I will freely admit I haven't been fully engaging on this one, but the question is, so you talked about looking at a species portfolio, but when I first thought about this when this came up, I was thinking more of a permit portfolio. Is there a difference? Because in my mind, it almost is. So I'm just kind of get a sense of what that project really is focused on.
Yeah, I can attempt this, and I'll look to Dr. O'Keefe, who can also attempt to answer your question as well. So I think the question is what... You know, if you're thinking about in a region or kind of at a fleet level, so by gear type and permits that are currently held, like what species are currently being harvested? What are some of the gaps in terms of not achieving catch limits? And then where are the opportunities? And where are the risks? So it's kind of looking back in time at what kind of vessels that have similar permits or fish in the same area have been catching, what species occur in those areas, what their relationships are with each other, and are there any obvious opportunities in terms of, you know, species that we're kind of leaving on the table as under-harvested? And then if that's the case, is, you know, do people have the sets of permits they would need to be able to make that harvest happen, or is it a limitation in the permitting system that is preventing folks from achieving that type of harvest? I don't, you maybe want to say that in a better way. I don't know.
Dr. O'Keefe.
Thank you. I think Ms. Bachman did a very nice job answering that. I'll just follow up. The concept of this is based on like financial portfolio management, and so that's where kind of the underlying theory of it, what has been developed over time. So the, you know, I think I understand your question, Mr. Chair, that is it a species optimization or is it a permit optimization? And I think it's a combination of the two, and where the team is right now is at the stage of understanding kind of the universe of species that we interact with, because it's not just New England species, there's others. So that's where they are, and our ultimate goal with this is to try to inform, as Michelle described, is there an optimal way to look at permit suites and allow some permit splitting and the like.
Okay, that's super helpful. I'm just kind of working through it. I kind of understood what you were going through, but you know, just some of the challenges, you know, that really popped into my head based on that response is, you know, a fisherman will have multiple permits, limited access, open access. There's reasons why they may or may not have all of those permits. The utility of whether they have a permit, whether they actually use it or not for various reasons. Thinking about permits and what permits give you the opportunity to do. So, quote unquote, what each permit allocates you to do. You know, certain fisheries give you days at sea. Some of them give you a hard quota. Some give you a tack approach. So this it's just another thought of how things may look different. And also, as we know, the world is changing and fishing behavior has changed over time. So just thinking about someone might have harvested something, you know, 5-6 years ago, but has definitely changed their behavior for various reasons. So just throwing out some ideas that may throw a little monkey wrench into that, but, you know, definitely for consideration for the working group as they move forward on that. Thank you.
Yeah, respond really quick. And I think we're still at the team has had the data for a few months and they're really beginning to kind of work through the patterns that they've seen in past harvests and want to get a little further with building the tools and being able to describe what types of simulations and scenarios they could run. And then at some point in the not too distant future, I think we'll be ready to take that out to the permit holding public and say, here's what we've done, here's what we can do, here's the types of questions we're thinking of asking. But how does this fit in with, like, the permits you hold and kind of how you're thinking about the system and what you see as the opportunities? And I think really the analysis will be a way to kind of test some potential scenarios and opportunities and see how risks could be minimized. But we certainly would want to do that informed by people's experience with holding these permits and using them together and kind of what their limitations are and recognize that there's obviously a lot of investment that's gone into people's permits that they hold and certainly not wanting to undermine any of that. So it's a complicated now. I think the steering committee's reaction was, this sounds really interesting, but we don't quite understand where you're going. And so I think there's kind of a lot happening under the hood at the level of the contractor. And I think we can certainly have some conversations in the coming months about how to move this work forward. But thanks for your comments.
Yeah, thank you. And I did see that public engagement process, and what I said will probably be heard numerous times over and over with all the public that you do engage on it. But thank you for that. I will go to Mr. Pierdnock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Bachman. Can you go to slide 11, please?
I can't read the numbers, so.
It was the list of different species.
This one?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, I know it's difficult to include all the different species, and especially the species that may be, you know, migrating or, you know, intrusive into our waters as a result of change in environmental conditions. But as I look at this, you know, the statement was made that the focus of this is going to be on species of commercial concern or importance. As I look at this, if we were looking at species that were commercially and recreationally important, haddock, pollock, cod, halibut, to name a few, can you go back to that?
Yeah.
They're not.
You mean the portfolio slide or the?
Yeah, the portfolio slide.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yet they're not on the list. And so I need some clarity also first. What is the rationale not to include recreational? Because significant money has been allocated now to go through this exercise, and you're only looking at the species of commercial importance. And as I look at that list, you're still not on the page. Though few of those are of recreational importance. They're of commercial importance. So that whole user group's being left out. I'm a bit disappointed in that. Maybe you could provide me the rationale and clarity, but if that's the way forward, I don't think that's appropriate. In addition, you have sand lance as one of the forage species. You could list a bunch of them, and it's a matter of, you know, there may be limitations in how far you're going to go. Herring, mackerel, menhaden, squid, sand lance, that would be my list. I don't know if you can go that far. And if there's nothing available, they're eating crustaceans. I mentioned that this morning. You know, I'm on the water fishing. If these aren't around, they're filling up with that, and then they're not getting fat and healthy as a result of lack of that. So, you know, there's other species there. Whiting, cod, and haddock, bluefin eat them.
Right.
So what is it we're looking at? Where are we going to go? And could you provide me some clarity about this focus on species of commercial importance?
Sure.
I hope it's not recreational, it's not being considered.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I think I was probably made a tactical error in putting two lists of species for two different projects and like the adjacent two slides. So for the ecosystem component species analysis, we're really looking at almost at probably like an inverse of the list of species that might be the foci for the portfolio analysis. So for the ecosystem components, we're thinking about species that have an important ecological role, but are maybe not heavily targeted or harvested, that are incidental. So things like, or are a forage species that we don't currently have under management, but we want to consider the implications of kind of how they're distributed, how they're used by our managed species, kind of their role in the ecosystem, making sure to promote their conservation as we're doing council fishery management. So this list of species in the table are the things that we might consider as candidates for ecosystem components. Probably they're going to be species that are not really a recreational or a commercial fishery target. So that's kind of one list. And then the portfolio analysis, this would focus, we think, on species that are more kind of important to fisheries, including both Mid-Atlantic or New England managed fisheries. The analysis, like the methods that have been developed are kind of based on evaluating catch and revenue of those species. Those data streams are a lot more robust for commercial fisheries than for recreational fisheries. So the way the analysis has been developed to date and the project that we contracted out is to do an evaluation of commercial harvests of those species and think about opportunities for commercial permits. Certainly you could extend this work and adapt it into looking at recreational harvest portfolios and thinking about ways to optimize those and kind of ways to rethink opportunities for recreational harvest, but that's just outside the scope of this initial project. I think if, you know, we go through this process of evaluating commercial portfolios and are able to, you know, take the results and apply them to management in useful ways, and then that, you know, the next step from that might be to kind of go back and look at recreational harvest and ask similar questions about how to optimize that. But this portfolio work is specifically focused on commercial, just based on the data available to us. Is that?
Thank you. Next up, Jackie O'Dell. Oh, sorry. You do have a follow-up?
Certainly.
Sure.
You certainly know I have a follow-up. I'm very disappointed in that answer. The goals and objectives of a commercial fleet are different than the objectives of the recreational fleet. We have two user types at this table, and those user types are what we manage our fishery based on. And the fact that that's being excluded, the goals and objectives are different, the outcome could be different. I'm just very surprised. I was on the Ecosystem-Based Fishery Management Committee, and they had those in which they could evaluate recreational and commercial, and those that it wasn't, because, you know, recreationally, those fish weren't targeted commercially. So there's a number of different examples of these species which both can be done. You know, I was very happy to see these IRA projects and so on, but the fact that it's being excluded, I'm disappointed. I hope that can be relooked at and include recreational. And as I say, haddock, cod, pollock, halibut, are just a few of their importance. And there's plenty of data and information associated with haddock and cod and ecosystem-based issues and plenty of observations by recreational as well as the commercial fleet of different environmental conditions and how things have changed over time. So I ask that just be reconsidered. Otherwise, I'm disappointed if it isn't. Thanks.
Dr. O'Keefe?
Thank you. So just to clarify, Michelle, if you wouldn't mind going back to the ecosystem component slide. So there's a specific definition for what an ecosystem component species is under Magnuson and through our national standard guidelines. And it's here. Thank you. These are stocks that don't necessarily require to be included in a fishery management plan and have conservation and management measures applied the way we do for cod and haddock and pollock. So what we have been looking at and are evaluating through the IRA project is, are there species that are no longer really of commercial or recreational importance to the level that we need to maintain updating specifications and putting in management measures? There's two approaches to do this. One is to remove them completely from a fishery management plan because they no longer really meet the Magnuson requires for conservation and management. The other approach is this ecosystem component species. And if you could just go to the next slide, Michelle, please. This is where, you know, we have identified a bunch of species that we're evaluating. And please, the first word on this slide is potential. This is not done. We're working on it now. These are species that are currently, most of them, in fishery management plans that we've identified to say we maybe don't need to do conservation and management measures as Magnuson requirements anymore, but we could keep these as ecosystem components so that we are still looking at what the results of a trawl survey might be or different types of surveys. We're still tracking the condition of these to ensure that we're not exceeding any sort of bycatch concerns or things like that. The one difference here is sandlance, which we don't manage right now, but we're recognizing we might want to add this to the list of ecosystem component species so that we start monitoring some of the data around it for all the reasons you listed, because of its importance in the ecosystem. The other project on portfolio, that's looking at all of the things we manage and have permits for on the commercial level to try to identify if our current restrictions around commercial permitting, which doesn't allow a lot of commercial, like permit splitting, you have to have a whole permit suite. We're trying to understand if that's optimal or really needs to be optimized. None of this is excluding the importance of recreational fishing. They're two separate projects, and ecosystem component is not evaluating the importance of the ecosystem. It's a specific term defined under Magnuson that we may be applying to some of these species that we no longer need to have in a fishery management plan. I hope that helps.
Are you okay, Mike?
I think you've clarified it, and I feel a little bit more comfortable now. I just want to make sure we're not the forgotten sons and it's not being looked at and evaluated. Because I see this at ICAT, that commercial dominates, and goals and objectives commercially are different than goals and objectives regularly. I see it there. You see it up and down, you know, different, whether it's Atlantic States Marine Fishery Commission or other councils. So, thank you for clarifying that. As long as it's included in there, I'm comfortable with it, and I understand now with through the clarity. Maybe you want to consider rewording what's written in there because it's a little made me jump almost jump out of my seat. Thank you.
Duly noted. Jackie O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So that was a very fruitful discussion. Actually answered a lot of the questions I had. When I was reading the notes from the meeting, I think I almost fell out of my chair when I saw some of the discussions in regards to potentially including species like witch flounder or Atlantic halibut. Or then I had to go back and think, what is an ecosystem component, and how does Magnuson define it, and what is the criteria for which we're moving forward in our ecosystem species? I mean, I think that criteria is really, really important to define and for the committee to keep wrapping their minds around. In terms of in the species list, you know, I don't know how many years we've discussed windowpane as being, I mean, I think 10 years now, 15 years now, we've discussed potentially windowpane as being a stock that would be a great pilot program. It's not a commercially, you know, important species. It's not, you know, harvested by the, there isn't an allocation in the groundfish program. It has had huge impacts on the scallop fishery for accountability measures. you know, it seems like that stock alone would be a great opportunity for us to kind of move forward in a pilot program focused around that one stock without having any indirect impacts to our fisheries that that we're managing right now. So anyways, it's more of a comment, I guess, because Kate took my thunder away with all the with all the Magnuson language and the criteria that's in there. It's good to see that, and I just would just encourage that to continue to be defined so that there isn't any, you know, it's a great opportunity to move forward, and I just wouldn't see, want there to be any unintended consequences. Thanks.
Mr. Hansen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for the presentation. And I think this discussion is very important, but I'm going to change it. only because there's a question that I have. If you could go to slide 19, please. We were given an ecosystem, state of the ecosystem report to the council. The last time we had one, there was a 10-year projection of a decadal pause in the warming of the shelf waters. And can you explain the table, the third one for the Mid-Atlantic Bight? It looks like there is one forecast ensemble that's showing an increase of water temperature. Could you explain the difference between the different ensembles that are there? Because I don't know. I just need
yeah.
information.
I can try, and then I think Dr. Ross would probably be happy to hear from you to explain this better than I can. So these forecasts are up, the annual forecasts or the seasonal forecasts are updated every 3 months. So on this particular chart, the 2025-04 is the April forecast, and they're kind of running the forecast a bunch of times, which is why you see all the little, the kind of lightly shaded lines. There's a lot of variation, and then the mean across that ensemble of forecasts is shown in the dots. And so that's the April. The orange is the updated ensemble mean from July. And So what you can see that depending on the region, those forecasts are more similar or more dissimilar. So we're looking at four different ecosystem areas here: Scotian Shelf, Gulf of Maine, Mid-Atlantic Bight, or the Southeast U.S. The Gulf of Maine, I think, includes Georges Bank here potentially. So for some, there's the two forecasts run at the two separate times are more similar, and in some cases in the Mid-Atlantic Bight, there was some dynamic of the system that they weren't quite projecting correctly in April, and you know the anomaly was actually lower, it turned out, when they reran the seasonal forecast in July. So this is just giving you a sense of kind of how are the predictions kind of bearing out. And there's different ways, I think, to represent these data in terms of maps in addition to these figures. Probably someone in this room can explain these certainly better than I can. And then the reanalysis of the glories, those are kind of looking back in time at sort of past observations and kind of what were the true. So certainly one of, I think, the task for the CEFI program and then for us as a steering committee is to be able to kind of take these forecasts into our process and make sure we understand them well enough to like explain them at a council meeting and then feel comfortable in applying them to our management discussions without getting something wrong. So I think it was clear to me from the, it was a really good conversation at the steering committee, kind of digging into some of these. I think we need more kind of time and practice at understanding these and really being able to communicate them both within our processes and within the CEFI program. So I think we're kind of working towards that. But, you know, generally, I think the reaction to the forecast was that it was seemed to be representing things that fit with what people were seeing on the water, but maybe not exactly in specific circumstances. So I think we need to figure out kind of where the daylight is between the forecasts and what people are seeing on the water and be able to understand that. I'll stop talking because I think that's the best I can do. Thanks for the question. I mean,
that's very helpful. I mean, the trends is what I'm looking at. The trend on the April forecast is constant increase. The July forecast trends is more stable. So that's helpful. The other question is the 10-year decadal pause still a topic of, expectation?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, that's
yeah, I think the sense is longer term that sort of pause in warming is, that okay. Still seems to be evident in the forecast.
No, it was troubling to me as for scallop survival in the Mid-Atlantic Bight to see a constant increase projection.
Mm-hmm.
So to see it, getting an understanding of what that graph shows is very helpful. Thank you.
Yep.
Ted Platts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for this presentation, Michelle. Mike's point, I was really happy to see this, and it's come up in conversation with Mr. Pappalardo, but I'll just point out quickly, I didn't bring up the skate distinctions in geography with the last presentation because I didn't want to beat a dead horse, but I'll give it a quick kick here if you don't mind. You got four of the seven skate species are right here, and how much easier is skate management going to be if we turn four of those species into this ecosystem component? It saves time, energy, expense. It's, that's what this is about, and I think it speaks volumes to the impracticality of managing skate as a complex, whether from the range and distribution of the different species or the landings. And, I just wanted to kind of highlight that. I mean, I've been fishing for winter skate for 30 years, and I'm yet to see a rosette skate. I'm sure they're out there. Everyone says they are, but I've never seen one. So I think this is great. It's, helping to streamline the management process. Thank you for your work. Thank you.
Michelle.
Just a quick response to that. One of the things that we will be able to do with the ecosystem components project is bring Dr. Hake's species distribution model outputs into that. And so for something like skates that are managed as a complex, there's a lot of outputs that we didn't really talk about during the EFH presentation, but where we can look at the covariance between species, we can look at what's predicting higher densities and see if a clear nose skate and a winter skate have very different niches. And if they do, and winter skate is very important commercially and clear nose skate is not, and their niches are different and their spatial distributions are different, then I think that makes us feel pretty okay about managing one as an ecosystem component and one as a target. We wouldn't do this because they're both commercially important, but winter skate and little skate have more overlapping distributions. They have more similarity in their niches. And so we would look at the model outputs for those two and say it would be very difficult to disentangle these species in like a bycatch sense because they overlap and they co-occur. Or maybe they do in some seasons, but less so in others. And so I think hopefully we can use the model outputs to help us understand what the relationships are, lack of relationships are between species. And then if we say, okay, clear nose is an ecosystem component, but how do we want to promote its conservation? Then we have some tools in the toolbox to be able to do that. So kind of merging the two different projects together, but I think it's an exciting opportunity for sure. Lots of directions we can go in.
Seeing no further hands, I go back to you, Mr. Pappalardo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's pretty obvious from the level of discussion and interest from the council that everyone's jealous they're not on this committee. This is the coolest committee we have, the coolest committee we've ever had. And I also want to point out that we have the benefit and the advantage of many of the staff at the council engaging in various projects through this committee, and it's just a wonderful experience to have the interaction across multiple FMPs, tackling a lot of the issues that have come up time and time again through each FMP. And then lastly, I just want to point out that the last meeting we had on the 2nd of September, we had nearly 60 people in attendance, which shows you the level of interest that folks have in these issues that we're tackling. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pappalardo. So we're all set. That concludes Climate and Ecosystem